What's going on, guys? Welcome to episode 5 of FFB Unwrapped Fantasy Football. This is Perry Aston, joined by Adam Stark, as always. Special guest today, Dr. Jesse Morse. How you doing today, man? Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. I'm doing great.
I know he's part of the Fantasy Doctors. Right now, they are very busy, of course, with the fantasy season in swing and injuries, of course, popping up left and right. Doctor, I'm going to let you run with a little bit of your credentials, what you do. Just let our listeners know.
Yeah, so I'm a medical doctor, sports medicine fellowship trained down in Florida. I practice just north of West Palm Beach. And I do a lot of non-surgical stuff, a lot of joint injections, a lot of concussion management, PRP, that type of stuff. So I see a lot of the stuff that these guys are dealing with on the field day to day in my office every day. I'm a big fantasy guy, a big DFS guy, so I kind of put it all together and monitor all these injuries in between patients and whatnot. Stay super busy. Doing a ton of my own podcasts and whatnot, and then just providing content as much as I can.
I love your YouTube videos on these individual players with their injuries. A few of these that we're going to name today on these lists have their own individual video that you're going to have to go check out on Dr. Jesse Morse's YouTube stream, so you can see that. It's also, I believe you said, on the Apple Podcast app too, every individual video that you do. You got to go check that out along with all of our videos.
Strip them down and throw a little music in the back, and then just if you're just doing it in the car. The good thing is like this is by far the most in-depth you'll hear anybody talk about these injuries that from somebody who actually knows what they're talking about.
Exactly.
There's just so many injuries, sometimes it's hard to cover everything, but I usually give like a 2-minute spiel about what's going on. I have a good model in the office that like a knee model that I can show you exactly what you're seeing if you're on YouTube, and just to kind of visualize what's going on and realistic expectations. You know, last year and the year before, I was covering the Philadelphia Phillies and the Toronto Blue Jays.
Nice.
As part of their spring training and their year-long cruise. So I've taken care of a lot of these professional guys, and I know how they think and how the ins and outs. So I can appreciate it from that perspective, and not many people can say that, especially that are diagnosing this stuff from afar like some of us are.
Like you said, there's a ton of injuries. There's, I believe, what, 6 or 7 hamstring injuries alone that we can talk about today. So at this point of the season, it's insane. Before we dive in, I want to remind you guys to find our podcast on podcast.com as well as the Apple Podcast app. You can follow us on Twitter at FFB Unwrapped. Follow my own Twitter page at Perry Aston. You can follow Adam over there at Everyday FFB and Dr. Jesse Morse at Dr. Jesse Morse. So please go follow them. Also, you can go check out the Fantasy Doctors at The Fantasy DRS. Let's just jump right in today, guys, and we'll start with your list of injuries, Jesse, and kind of start from the top and go all the way down. You can kind of do a quick fire if you'd like. We can go through the ones that kind of stand out a little bit more, of course. I wanted to start with the Jimmy Garoppolo one that's on top. That is the biggest news right now, ACL tear. So talk to me about, I think it's a season ending if I'm not mistaken, so let's dive into Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, so obviously this is a big offseason acquisition, you know, last season from the Patriots. Had the potential to be a stud quarterback. Was just starting to kind of get his guys healthy with Goodwin. He was running up the left-hand sideline. I was watching the game, and he tried to place a lot of stress on his left knee as he was trying to juke a defender and come back right, and the left knee buckled without getting contacted, which anytime you hear a non-contact knee injury, you think ACL. And unfortunately, and until proven otherwise, I was hoping it was just what we call an LCL, which is a collateral ligament that runs north to south on the outside of the knee. But unfortunately, it was at least an ACL, probably an LCL also. These, as you remember from Ryan Tannehill 2 years ago, this is very common, but unfortunately, what you cannot do is try to wing it and just do a PRP or whatnot. In fact, you actually have to do surgery. You have to get it appropriately done and bust your butt in rehab, because if not, you're going to have a re-injury like Tannehill did last year, and then he was basically out for almost 2 years.
Yeah, sometimes it's about a year recovery is kind of what I've always known about an ACL tear in general. Of course, with professional athletes, with the type of rehab that they're getting and the attention that they're getting, it's usually accelerated a little bit, but usually from what I've known growing up, it was about a year for an ACL in general. I know your notes here say about 9 to 11 months, which would be, of course, the season. How much do you think the recovery time is accelerated with the type of care that they're getting compared to somebody else?
You can have a genetic freak like Adrian Peterson, who we'll probably talk about a little bit. He did it in 6 months. that's not recommended. The data shows 9 to 11 months, and that's that ligament too, because you're basically harvesting an old ligament from either the quad or the patella or the hamstring, or sometimes we'll use Achilles, and then you're shortening it and basically running it diagonally from one part of the knee to the other. So it's not really supposed to be there. It's not as strong as the original one. I mean, then you need time to allow it to heal, to get stronger. The hardest part is cutting. That's going to put the most amount of stress on it. So running straight forward is not too bad. You can do that in 3-4 months, but it's the cutting that is usually the last thing to come. And the issue is if it's just an ACL, then it's pretty straightforward and it's 9 to 11 months. But if it's like an LCL or a posterior, what we call a posterior lateral corner, or multiple different locations, then you're starting to push the timeline. This is what I was concerned about with Carson Wentz, because he had multiple ligaments and a possible posterior lateral corner, which means that normal timeline for him, if he wasn't a professional player, would be about 14 months. He did it in 11. Right. Maybe less than that.
That was a perfect transition into, of course, Carson Wentz, who just played his last game in the rain. Coming back, I wanted to ask you your non-professional opinion, just for fantasy. What did you think about Carson Wentz as a quarterback? Were you happy to see him? And then from a professional standpoint, how did his knee look when he was playing?
Here's the situation we talked about in my podcast last week. If the Eagles were 2-0, would he be playing? I think the answer is no. But the problem is they barely were 1-1. Foles looked awful. And they're like, well, we can't start 0-3 because, or, 1-2, possibly 1-3. That's pretty much our entire season. It's very hard to dig out of that hole. So they almost hit the panic button, in my opinion, a little too soon. A couple weeks ago, he didn't look ready. He did okay and in the first game. His shoulder and his elbow is fine. We know his passing is going to be fine. Problem is, he took a lot of sacks. He's not mobile. As far as we know, he didn't get re-injured, but you just hope that he didn't get re-injured and he continues to get stronger.
Of course, it's surprising with how good that offensive line is, like you said, that he was getting hit a lot, but it was a crazy game in the rain. I wouldn't take this game, since it's such a small sample size in such weird conditions, as something to really make a big deal of. We have to kind of keep an eye on this moving forward, but he is back and he is playing, so that is definitely good news for Eagles fans. Let's move on to Titans Marcus Mariota and Titans Blaine Gabbert together. Both of them battling different injuries. Why don't you dive into that?
Yeah, so Mariota's got an ulnar nerve injury. This is the nerve that controls the strength and the feeling on the fifth and half of your fourth finger. So normally it's a temporary injury where it's just, this is your funny bone nerve. So if you bang your elbow, this is what hurts. The problem is his was probably damaged a little more than just temporary because it's still bothering him.
Right.
The issue with nerves is they heal really slow, like a millimeter a day. So if we're talking about only an inch worth of damage, that's like 6 to 8 weeks worth of healing time. So it takes a long time. Now, if this was his non-throwing hand, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But the fact that it's throwing hand, it's basically throwing with 3.5 fingers.
Yeah, that's impossible.
He can't really feel his fourth and fifth digit, or to an extent. So he's going to have trouble putting velocity. He's going to have trouble with accuracy, that type of stuff. So you can put whatever glove you want on him. I just don't think he's going to be super accurate for a couple more weeks.
Now, Blaine Gabbert got a concussion. He's likely out for week 4, as you said. Marcus Mariota does have some more time to recover. Do you think he's going to be able to play the entire game in comfort, or do you think they're going to look elsewhere for another quarterback to take the helm?
They just signed Austin Davis right now, so okay. They did bring in another quarterback, and probably expecting Gabbert not to make it out there, and hoping Mariota can push through, because if he can push through and beat the Jaguars, I think he could push through again.
That was impressive, to say the least. I mean, Gabbert and Tyrod both suffered concussions this week. I don't know Gabbert's history, but I do know Tyrod's, or however you pronounce his name. The problem
Tyrod, same thing. He's not starting anymore, so it's not relevant.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with concussions is each one is different, first of all, and everybody's timeline is completely unique. So some people with one concussion may take 7 days. Some people may take 14 days. It takes longer. On average, sports concussions resolve within 7 to 14 days. About 75% of them do. But that's the first one. Each subsequent one usually takes longer. I don't know Gabbert's history, so I can't speak to that, and I'm not evaluating him. I don't know how he's dealing with, but I doubt he plays this week, and if he does, he's at significantly increased risk for another one.
Yeah, definitely. And Aaron Rodgers, someone that you say is at risk for continuing injuries. He seems so fragile nowadays with how his body just seems to always be dealing with injuries, but he's such a tough person that he's always battling through, which, of course, from a doctor's standpoint, can't be something that you recommend and can't be something that's going to keep his longevity moving forward. He does have a knee injury. You said minor MCL and a bone bruise possibly. I know he's always banged up. How is he looking? Do you expect him to miss any time moving forward? Or is this just one of those things where with Aaron Rodgers, any type of injury that might sideline other players, it's just hard to tell with Rodgers because he might just fight through it every time?
They haven't clarified exactly what this injury is, but based on the video of what I saw happened, he sprained the MCL, which is the ligament that runs north to south on the inner aspect of your knee. This is the same injury that Evan Engram has, that Doug Baldwin has. But the problem with it is those guys are runners, they're cutters, they have to be able to zigzag and avoid defenders in a cut manner, whereas Rodgers is predominantly stationary. I mean, he may move a little bit, so right, he can get away with a knee brace and maybe be okay. He's having difficulty throwing, stepping into and throwing, planting on that leg. The bone bruise, which is to think of a bruise in your arm, but now it's in your bone, very painful, difficult to treat because you really can't do much for it, and they take a long time to heal. So this is just an injury he's going to have to continue to deal with until it's 100% or as good as he's going to get it. He may have a meniscal injury. They haven't really said, so it's hard to speculate. But the problem is I don't feel comfortable starting him.
I was going to say, it's not a good feeling if you're a fantasy owner of Aaron Rodgers, because week in and week out, you know he can fight through this, but it's how healthy is Aaron Rodgers? He's going to have a cue for questionable by his name for the majority of the year, and week in and week out, if you're an Aaron Rodgers owner, you may need to go stream a quarterback just in case to throw on your bench. And I'm a guy that isn't a big fan of you know, having two quarterbacks on your roster, especially when you've invested the draft capital that you have to draft for Aaron Rodgers. It's a tough situation with that health, but when he is on the field, he's, I would think, the most productive quarterback in the league. We're going to move on
besides Pat Mahomes.
Oh, right now, yeah. Besides Pat Mahomes. I was talking about notoriously.
I hope he continues it though.
Yeah, I wasn't talking about just these three games, but let's just talk about that really quick. Let's get off the injuries for 1 second and talk Pat Mahomes, who set an NFL record for the amount of touchdowns he threw through three games, passing Peyton Manning's record. He's just been insane. He's been efficient. He's played extremely well, as we talked about in a previous podcast, Adam. At first, it was the Tyreek Hill show, and I believe it was me, you, and Andrew, and we were talking about the fact that he has so many other weapons. When he just decides to not go to Tyreek Hill, watch what he's going to be able to do elsewhere. And Tyreek Hill didn't score a touchdown last game. He had one deep bomb that he caught, but his production is elsewhere. Chris Conley, Travis Kelce, you know, the running backs are getting definitely in the mix. You can see that he has full control of this team. What are your guys' takes on Pat Mahomes? Because I'm blown away. I thought he had the biggest arm in the world, but would have terrible accuracy issues, and he is proving everybody wrong, and he looks insane through three games. Give me your take, Adam, and I want to hear you as well, Doctor.
Yeah, I definitely think he has proven himself, and he's shown he's the real deal. He's thrown 13 touchdowns through three games, NFL record. He's in a category with like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, guys who went on to throw 50 touchdowns and I think 53 touchdowns on a season. He's just, if you watch him play, it's not guys are just wide open and he's just making easy throws. He's making throws on the run. He's putting the ball on the numbers. He looks good. He looks like he's been there. He knows what he's doing. He's very calm.
You have to credit some of this to Andy Reid, who people tend to criticize
sometimes.
He's a wizard
with calling plays and just scheming things for the right players.
What I heard was an interview with Pat Mahomes during the draft process. It was them two in a room, and Andy Reid ordered lunch, and they ended up sitting in the room for 5 hours just looking at game tape, just looking over plays, going over strategy, going over everything, and all Pat Mahomes was saying was, give me more, give me more, I just want more. And this was while he had Alex Smith still on the team, and he just fell in love with Pat Mahomes, which is why they drafted him, why they made those moves to go get him, and why they cut ties with Alex Smith. They knew what they had. You could see exactly what they have. And Andy Reid knows when he has a star quarterback. And there's nothing wrong with Alex Smith. He's a good quarterback, definitely above average. And I would say very good borderline. But, you know, Pat Mahomes has the potential to be great and exciting, and he's a modern NFL quarterback, and I'm excited to watch it. As soon as I see him start running around too, and start this first 80-yard run for a touchdown that he breaks off, I'm going to go absolutely insane.
He hardly had any rushing yards.
Yeah, I'm going to go insane.
He's got scramble.
He has so much athleticism as well, and people haven't even had to see that yet, and they're the number one offense in the league. The potential is crazy. The defense for Kansas City isn't anything to write home about because it's going to be shootouts all year. You can do that when you have the offense that you have, and you can continue to try and make improvements on defense. Doctor, let's move on to Matt Breida, who doesn't have an official knee injury because he did come back in the game. But what happened with that? Because he definitely fought through it and ended the game, and he is tied for the NFL lead in rushing yards as of right now with Ezekiel Elliott. So give me your update on Matt Breida.
So it looks like he suffered what we call a hyperextended knee. So basically his knee just overextended more than it should have. The problem with this is that this can be very mild and just irritated for a week, or this could be significant and it can lead to an ACL tear. So I'm not ready to say he's out of the woods yet, but at the same time, they haven't released any information yet, and the fact that he was on the field pretty much soon after is very good news. That doesn't mean that something can creep up in the MRI the morning after, or how much the knee's swelling, you know, 3-4 days later, which would be basically now. So I don't know if he's going to play this upcoming week. He will be a target monster along with Alfred Morris because of the Garoppolo injury and because of the splits that he was dealing with last year.
Imagine this though, right now. It's not appealing to me. CJ Beathard and Morris with no Breida, no Garoppolo, a banged up Goodwin. You got all types of injuries, and you got Kittle there with Beathard. It's just, I know they have that connection from, I believe, playing together in Iowa, but it's not an offense to write home about when all of San Francisco is so excited, of course, giving Jimmy Garoppolo that massive contract and Matt Breida breaking out the way that he is this year. Like I said, tied for the lead for rushing yards in the NFL. It would be very tough for the 49ers to lose him for any type of significant time, let alone even 1 week. They really do hope to have him back. It's a tough backfield there and for injuries in San Francisco, and something you might want to stay away from right now while they're battling that and while the transition of quarterback comes in. I don't see a lot of fantasy points there, to be 100% honest.
Yeah, thing for the 49ers is I would definitely consider streaming defenses against them now, because Beathard's kind of thrown into a position he probably didn't think he was going to get into all year, and now lost his starting running back before season even started. And although Breida's looked decent, I don't think they'll be continuing on.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Let's move on to Redskins' Adrian Peterson. Doctor, I know this was one that you really wanted to talk about, and I know they have a bye week coming up. Let's talk about what's going on with him.
I wasn't on him last week, and kind of disappointing because he had a monster week, but unfortunately he was spotted at the end of the game with a walking boot on, which is usually not a good sign. This likely means he suffered either an ankle or a foot injury. We found out later it was an ankle sprain. The problem is I don't know where the ankle sprain is. So you basically have three locations. You have a high ankle sprain, which is notorious and take a long time to heal. You have the low ankle sprain of two varieties, the lateral, which is much more common, and then medial, which is not as common because it's so strong. My suspicion is this is a mild to moderate lateral ankle sprain. And the good news is that they have a bye this week, but I expect him to be in the boot most of the week, get a ton of therapy. But the problem is these have a tendency to re-injure very easily. If you've ever had an ankle sprain, you know.
Right.
All he has to do is, you know, step on it the wrong way, step on someone else's foot or exactly. Anything like that, and it can roll again. You can try bracing these, but guys don't like wearing them. You can try taping the shoe, but it just doesn't stay tight. So this is a tough injury. I'd say there's a 50-50 chance he plays in week five.
Like you said, they're getting lucky with that bye week right now. He gets that extra week to recover and not practice if he doesn't need to. It's going to be surprising to not see him come in 2 weeks, I believe, with a ankle sprain. But like you said, it's such a tough injury. And with Chris Thompson there too, he's always banged up. So chances are within those 2 weeks, he may have something going on as well. He's always on the injury report. It's a tough situation always for the Washington Redskins running backs. Just like I said with 49ers running backs, it's very tough with injuries right now. Let's move on to Jaguars' Leonard Fournette hamstring. I know he's not played the last 2 weeks. Is this precautionary, or do you expect to see him this week, no doubt?
I'm still on the fence, 50-50. I was a little surprised they held him out last week, but I thought it was for his own benefit, even though it came back to bite him, because they lost. But here's the thing with Fournette. I recorded a podcast in the preseason saying that super high on Fournette, he's a top five talent. He could easily lead the league in rushing yards, but he's injury prone, in my opinion. I said that there was going to be a 75% chance he would end up on the injury report sometime this year with a lower extremity injury, and he didn't even make it out of the first game.
Yeah,
you know, he's had multiple ankle issues in both legs since college. You know, now we're dealing with a hamstring, which have a tendency to linger. Surprisingly, he hasn't had a knee injury, thankfully, that we know of. These can take anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks, depending on if it's a mild or moderate. If it was severe, he would have had surgery, so we know it's not severe. But the good news is that I think he'll probably be back this week. He just needs to make sure he does not re-aggravate it, because if he re-aggravates it, we have a situation like we did last year with Corey Davis, and his season was pretty much lost. They need to be smart with this injury and allow him to fully heal. Hamstring injuries are notorious in the first 6 weeks between preseason and early season because guys aren't in football shape. They're dehydrated. It's hot as heck out there, depending on where they're playing, and they're just their muscles aren't ready, so they strain very easily, and this is what happened.
It's frustrating for Fournette owners. I know Adam and I have both been very high on him. When he is on the field, he's extremely productive. You need to have Yeldon on your team as a handcuff week in, week out if you're a Fournette owner, because he's just the next guy up for volume, but no one's really going to do what Fournette does in this offense. So until he's fully healthy back in that lineup, make sure you have Yeldon there as a handcuff. Joe Mixon, he is still out now with Bernard getting the RB1 carries. He was a major waiver wire pickup last week. Tell me what you think about Joe Mixon's status for this week and moving forward.
So Mixon had a couple different things going on. Talented kid, huge workload increase, but he had a little floating body in his knee, which by itself is not overly concerning, but if it's large enough, it can cause some issues. But he did have a meniscal tear, so the meniscus is basically the shocks for your car, but they're for your knee. So the meniscal tear is notorious for lingering, causing stabbing pain, sharp pain, and it is very uncomfortable. It has a tendency to swell, and just it does not do well. I just had a patient a little bit ago with it. And the problem is you need it scoped, you need to clean it out, and you need to give it a couple weeks to heal if you're going to expect to be able to do what you're asking the knee to do from a running back perspective. So if he comes back this week, I think it's a little early. I think week 5 or even 6 would be a better decision. I don't know when their bye is. I think Gio is going to be the lead back if Mixon plays at all this week.
Yeah, and Gio, of course, has his rapport in that offense and is not a bad replacement if you have him on your team like we were talking about with handcuffs for Joe Mixon, who does have injury history as well. Move on to LeSean McCoy, a guy with a lot of injury history, and he's dealing with a definite rib injury that doesn't look too good. This offense didn't look very good all year, and let's talk about the fact that they just beat the Vikings convincingly. What is going on? The NFL is so weird. There's 4 teams right now that are 1 win, 1 loss, and 1 tie. You have the Bills destroying the Vikings. I have no idea what's going on, guys. So I know neither of you have an answer for me for what's going on. The Lions coming up. Just like we said, the Lions are first in the league in pass defense, but last in the league against the run on defense. What is going on with this league right now? It's absolutely insane, but that's why we love football so much.
Any given Sunday, man.
Any given Sunday.
That's why they play the game.
Any given Thursday, Sunday,
yeah,
or Monday,
Thursday,
Adam.
Monday.
But
Saturdays. Saturdays.
Wait, really quick question for you, Doctor, bringing up the Thursday game. There's been conspiracy theories that injuries are a lot more consistent on that particular day, of course, due to a shorter week, and a lot of players, especially towards the end of the season, don't want to play in these Thursday games. Is there a actual reason behind that?
I don't know if there's ever been documented proof. I'm sure that there was somebody did some research or something, but there's definitely an increased risk because unless you happen to have an early Sunday game and then I had a week off and then you have a Thursday game, the odds of you getting only 3 or 4 days, that's not enough to heal up these guys who have these massive injuries,
right,
or even regular injuries that are, you know, manageable. These guys play with the craziest stuff that we never even hear about. Yes, it's a lot harder to come back. I mean, you're going from 2 to 3 practices to maybe 1. Completely different game plan, different team, different skill sets, different, right. I mean, everything. So everything's accelerated, and it's like the NBA when you're on a back-to-back, it's so close, it wears on you, especially later in the year.
So does LeSean McCoy play this week, or yes or no?
Yes, but I want nothing to do with him because rib injuries are really painful.
I want nothing to do with him either, especially in that Bills offense. You don't know if you can bank on them yet. You have to see if last week was just a fluke or if this is something that has some potential moving forward. But for the Bills, like Dr. said, stay away from LeSean McCoy. If you have him on your team, just wait it out with him. Vikings' Dalvin Cook, what do you think about his injury? That's another hamstring. And, of course, Latavius Murray filling in didn't have the most productive week.
Yeah, I mean, this was a disappointing pick for me. I lost a lot of money this week on Murray. They got blown out, and it wasn't a good game script for him.
I mean, who made money on that game really quick? Like, no one made money. No one's like, yeah, let's take the Bills on this game right now straight up. Nope. No one could have predicted that. If anyone had any brackets, every bracket's broken.
If somebody predicted the Bills online, they made a ridiculous amount of money.
So yeah, let's hear Dalvin Cook.
So here's the thing with this injury. I don't know which leg it is, but if it's all, either way, he's coming off of an ACL reconstruction surgery. He's a very explosive guy. Hamstring injuries linger. I don't care if you're 20 or you're 50. They linger, and these guys think they're superhuman because they've been able to defy the odds basically their entire life because they're so gifted. The problem is you cannot push these. So I'm happy he didn't play last week. I wouldn't be, because they're playing on a short, I don't think they'll play this week either. And he shouldn't, because you don't want this to linger throughout the whole season, especially given his ACL surgery. So inherently, ACL reconstruction surgeries have a 30% re-tear rate in the next 2 years. That's documented. 21% on the opposite leg and roughly 10% on the leg that was repaired. Why is this important? Well, Deshaun Watson tore his opposing ACL less than 2 years after his other one. So it happens. It's not just a fluke. So you have to be careful with these guys.
Right.
You know?
100%. Let's ask you, I'm going to move it a little bit out of order and ask you about Darren Sproles and about Marlon Mack, both dealing with their own hamstring injuries. I know you were saying how those just are going to linger no matter how old you are, no matter who you are. So yep. What is your opinion on Sproles and on Marlon Mack, who I believe is dealing with a foot injury as well as a hamstring?
Yeah, so Sproles, I think maybe 50% chance of going. He's not exactly a spring chicken, and he's coming off an ACL as well.
Right.
He's more of a scat back, so there's a chance he could play, but I don't think he will, because I just don't think he will. As far as Marlon Mack, he came back and then left again with a foot and a hamstring, so I don't know what to make of this. I'm avoiding that whole backfield until we know more.
I totally agree. I actually like Jordan Wilkins' potential, too, in that offense. And Nyheim Hines, who, like you said, a step back, kind of just like Darren Sproles, in my opinion. So Marlon Mack, he does have talent, he does have potential, but that's not the guy that I go for in that Colts offense. And I'm not going to go for any of the Colts guys, of course, but just for moving forward, I'm not a huge Marlon Mack fan, and I know that he has a lot of injury history as well. I'm going to move back to Devontae Freeman and what's going on with him. I know Tevin Coleman didn't have the most productive game, but he is lined up for top 15, top 20 running back production moving forward while Freeman's out. How long do you expect him to be out for?
So this Freeman injury, they really haven't said much about it, but from what we know, this is basically a re-aggravation or irritation of a couple different ligament sprain that he suffered at the end of 2017, which he rehabbed all offseason, as far as we know. So the problem is, if he's dealing with a laxity or kind of, think of a rope that is not as tight as it's supposed to be, well, if you're asking that rope to sustain the knee to cut and run and do everything you're asking a running back to do, you're asking for it to re-injure. So they need to rehab it and do as much as they can before they ask him to come back. It's going to be a shootout every week with Atlanta, with Ricardo Allen tearing his Achilles and out for basically a whole year. So their defense is in shambles. They have to.
That's two safeties down for the entire year. That secondary is paper thin. It's insane to see what's happened so quick for the Atlanta defense. Yes, their defensive line isn't awful at all. That's the one thing I think would still be somewhat consistent, but that secondary is very tough, and it's going to be tough for them to hold up. against any sort of offense. Matt Ryan-led Falcons offense is going to have to put up a lot of points, and it's unfortunate right now, of course, for Freeman owners, but if you're a Tevin Coleman owner, I see them playing from behind a lot. Game script is a big deal in fantasy football, and I see Matt Ryan having to throw the ball a lot and them having to play, like I said, from behind, and Tevin Coleman plays a big part in that pass game. I love Tevin Coleman's ceiling in fantasy football, and I think that as the game script continues to get tougher for the Falcons with how tough how weak their defense is, they're going to be turning towards the pass. I think Tevin Coleman's going to be seeing a lot of passes out of the backfield, and right now with Freeman out, running back one volume at the very least with this offense. Patriots' Rex Burkhead, that's with a neck injury. It's going on with that. He's always banged up.
He's always banged up. We don't know anything about it. Typical Patriots, my beloved Patriots. I can't tell you anymore because they really
he's like a porcelain doll, Rex Burkhead. When he's on, he's there, but when he's porcelain, he's paper thin. It sucks to see him always on the injury report. And this year, what is his role in the offense? If you're a Rex Burkhead owner, do you drop him right now? Does he have any role on your team with how this Patriots offense is starting to look? I know Sony Michel hasn't put up flashy numbers or anything to write home about at all, but he is putting up the volume that you look for in fantasy, and it's weird to see the Patriots leaning towards one running back. And if there's another guy I'm going to look towards, especially in PPR formats, it's James White, who's going to have practically nothing to do with the run game and all to do with the passing game out of the backfield. So where does Rex Burkhead fit now?
The problem is, right now, they're limited for options about who they can throw to. That's what we saw on Sunday. It's like, you have Gronk, you have Hogan, you have Dorsett, who Brady's kind of happy about, you know.
And now you got Josh Gordon. What do you think about that?
I love Gordon, as long as, but the problem is, he's going to take him 3-4 weeks to learn the playbook. Like, this is not an easy playbook to learn. Everybody fizzles out in New England because the playbook is ridiculous. All the talent in the world, athletically gifted, but if he can't learn the playbook, then what good is he? He's going to be a go receiver.
This could be his last stop, though. I think he's going to take this seriously only because of how embarrassingly bad that was in Cleveland. And when he's on the field, he's, you know, arguably one of the most athletic wide receivers out there. And when he's not, he's one of the worst influences on, you know, off the field. And he doesn't know how to keep his head on straight. So I think him being in New England is the best thing to ever happen to him, where Bill Belichick will be able to keep a leash on him. They'll be able to get him serious about the game. And at this point, if he fails in New England, this, like I said, the last podcast, will be his last stop. So I think he's going to relish this opportunity, and I think he's going to play extremely well, of course, with Tom Brady. He's never even came close to having a quarterback of that caliber, and this is the most talented target that he's had since Randy Moss, as we've said in previous podcasts, Adam. So I'm excited about Josh Gordon. Rex Burkhead, who we were talking about, I'm not so excited about. So if you're a Rex Burkhead owner, he's rather chilling at the bottom of your bench in an IR slot or should be on the top of the free agent pool week in and week out. I'm just one of those, you know, you can nuke the other people in your league. Like, you don't want Rex Burkhead, but you can drop a little bomb and put it in free agency and somebody else will be somebody else's problem because it's a name that you're going to want to go grab, but you just don't want to deal with it. That's kind of how I'm looking at it, especially with his injury history and with how weird this offense is right now in New England. Let's move on to wide receivers. Bengals' AJ Green, groin injury, left the game. Do you think he's going to be playing next week? He is tied with Calvin Ridley for receivers with 4 touchdowns. And yeah, that's right. I said Calvin Ridley, not Julio Jones, who would be the second injury we're going to talk about. So AJ Green, Calvin Ridley, 4 touchdowns, big production leaving with A.J. Green's groin injury. How does he look for week 4 and moving forward?
I wouldn't start him in week 4, whether on the Bengals or personally in a fantasy perspective, because groin injuries are notorious. I had a guy in my office last week who had a groin injury, and he could barely lift his leg. Try to ask someone to run, play football, and cut and jump. Like, that's hard. You can't do that, and you're asking like someone 4, 5, 6, 10 days after the injury to like be superhuman. Like, that's hard to do. I give him another week or two. These re-injure really easy. Just let Boyd be the offense. Let Gio be there. Get Eifert involved. Don't risk re-injury because they have potential this year. They actually look pretty good.
Yeah, they definitely do. And right now there's other options there in Cincinnati. Tyler Boyd, someone we'll dive into on our Fire waiver wire when we're done with the injury segment here. Julio Jones, someone I talked about, who's being outshined by Calvin Ridley, something I never thought that I would say this year. How's Julio Jones' calf injury looking?
I like Julio. We know he struggles in the red zone, and I mean, Ridley may open up stuff for Julio, but Ridley is a stud. I'm very impressed.
I mean, Jones hasn't scored at all this year, so it's not even just the red zone. He hasn't found the end zone at all, and it's surprising to see Calvin Ridley with 4 touchdowns in 3 games. Insane production, someone that we talked about a couple podcasts ago to keep an eye on, and someone that me and Adam are both high on. I just picked him up on my Yahoo League with my boss at my work. He it's an in, right? I'm killing it. And I'm in first place. He's in last. So I'm thinking about sending him like an edible arrangement or like fantasy football for dummies and like a copy of my podcast or something like that to get him going. But I don't know if that's going to help me out at my work. So we're probably not going to do that. But Antonio Brown, calf injury as well. Both of them dealing with, is it a similar injury with Julio Jones and Antonio Brown with the calf injury?
So they didn't really say either is really a big deal. I'm not taking anything serious. AB did get shut out in the second half last night. I think that was just the way it played out. He's getting shadowed and whatnot. And Big Ben missed him a couple times, but not really concerned about either. Both are still top 10 plays. Wide receivers, here on going out. Both have a history. AB did last year, and Julio, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. So just something to monitor, but I'm not overly concerned about either.
Yeah, and Larry Fitzgerald, Josh Gordon, both dealing with hamstring injuries. Give me your take on both of them and how they're going to be looking next week if they play at all.
Fitz, kid's a stud, nice guy, older, but I'm surprised he played last week. I'm not surprised he didn't do much, but that was more offensive than anything. I think he has a better shot with Rosen. I think there's a good chance he plays this week as long as he didn't really re-injure it. He may be a sneaky buy low, personally. Gordon, I think he'll play this week. He'll have a limited playbook. And in my mind, he will be more of a Brandon Cooks than a Randy Moss, although I would heavily favor a Randy Moss resurrection if that's possible.
It was more just comparing the athletic potential, but not obviously production as one of the best wide receivers to ever play the game. I like your comparison to Cooks a little bit more as well. But Josh Gordon, when his head is on straight and his hamstrings are fine, he is looking insane on that field. And with Tom Brady, I don't even think we've seen the beginning of Flash Gordon yet. I think we're going to finally see how seriously crazy he actually is. Jarvis Landry, a guy that's going to benefit from Josh Gordon leaving in Cleveland and going to benefit with Baker Mayfield finally taking the reins. Let's take a quick pause here, guys. The Browns have won a game. Cleveland is drunk. They've been drinking the Bud Light beer ever since the fridges are open. Guys, give me your quick take. Celebrate with me. Take a shot, whatever you want to do. But the Browns have won a game, and this is something that... Give me your take on the Browns really quick. You can go with Jarvis Landry and his knee injury and what you think about him. But Baker Mayfield mania. I have a Baker-ection, if that's... But, guys, I'm excited.
So, I think that the kid has loads of potential, and I'm excited to see him actually do something with this franchise because they have a really good defense, and Landry could be a top 10 pick for a player for the rest of the year if, as long as he stays healthy and Baker stays healthy. So, through this something called the fantasy dose, which is an analytics-only driven medium through the fantasy doctors, and he is, I think he's the number one value play this week, and I'm not surprised. It doesn't, just because he's got so much potential, he's a volume hog, and I think Baker will aim for him, so great buy low if you can get him as well.
Now I'm going to ask you, because this is something that I did last week, and I told Adam and our last guest on our last podcast, I made a trade. I had AJ Green on my team. I sold him after his 3 touchdown performance for Jarvis Landry and for Nelson Aguilar, half point PPR.
Depends on your wide receiver depth.
I have Tyreek Hill. I have Tyreek Hill as well, Kenny Galladay, and Cooper Kupp at that time. But now that's Golden Tate.
Also, I mean, for the most part, that's not a bad trade only because A, Green is banged up, and B, I think Landry is a kind of underrated guy, even though he's, you know, a target monster.
I mean, this was pre-injury for AJ Green, so I feel like I'm looking in my crystal ball right now. And, of course, with Jarvis Landry, I'm a huge Jarvis Landry fan. He led the NFL in receptions last year. So you're right, he is underrated, but he wasn't known as a big play guy because he was dying in that, you know, awful Dolphins offense without Tannehill that last year with Cutler. So Jarvis Landry with Baker Mayfield, it looked like the connection that we've all been waiting for, and he still hasn't even scored a touchdown yet. I can put money down right now that Jarvis Landry is going to find the end zone this coming week. So he's seeing the volume. He's a number one wide receiver there. They've been growing him to be that number one all through Hard Knocks, all through the preseason, and they went out and made a move for him for a reason. And he really was a big reason why they pushed Corey Coleman out of there. Now Josh Gordon's out of there, and I'm not saying that Jarvis had anything to do with that, but he's going to benefit from not having him there in the receiver room because, one, in my opinion, I think Antonio Callaway with Jarvis Landry sounds like an amazing 1-2 punch to me, and I can't wait for David Njoku to finally break out with Baker Mayfield as well. I'm excited about the Browns' offense moving forward, and I'm still excited about the fact that they won a game. I got family up in Cleveland. I called them. They're excited. They're hyped. It's like they won the Super Bowl, so I'm going to give them that credit. I'm going to celebrate like they won the Super Bowl because, you know, they deserve it. Last year was rough. 49ers Marquise Goodwin. Yeah, rough to say the least, right? 49ers Marquise Goodwin, quad contusion. What do you think about him moving forward? I know he caught one catch this last week, but it was for a touchdown.
Yeah, so I'm going to run through these next ones quick because I got to go. But
perfect.
Marquise Goodwin, not overly worried about his injury more so than I am about his quarterback situation. Check out the video I did. It shows a really cool ultrasound aspiration that you basically get an understanding of what potentially he was dealing with. Alshon Jeffrey, rotator cuff. I don't think he'll be back for a couple weeks. These are hard injuries to return from. Doug Baldwin should be back next week, maybe the week after. Potential top 15 wide receiver automatically. So
definitely,
if he's available to buy low, go get him.
Definitely.
Concerned about Anthony Miller from the Bears, his dislocation of his shoulder. Could be mild, but potentially could be season-ending. And the Giants, Evan Ingram, knee sprain, MCL, could be mild week to week, but could also be 3 to 6 weeks. So we have to see how significant it is. Jack Doyle, they haven't really said anything. I don't know what to make of it. Forget about Greg Olsen. I know he's getting healthier, but this injury just does not heal well. He's going to need a surgery by the end of the year, I promise. And then for a couple major defensive player injuries. The Falcons, Ricardo Allen, I told you, Achilles, Terry's done, another hit. St. Patrick Peterson, the slot corner they got from the Eagles, high ankle sprain, out 3 to 6 weeks. And then the decimated Rams secondary, which is going to be a big deal. Both Aqib Talib may need season-ending surgery, but he's going to be out at least a month with an ankle. And Marcus Peters is out with a calf for at least 2 weeks, maybe up to four. So
is this the defense that you stay far away from, at least for the next week or two, Doctor?
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't target them as much. I think it'll be a little more higher scoring because of these. Their funnel defense can't be funneling anymore because they don't have those dominant corners to do so.
Right.
Sean Lee from the hamstring for the Cowboys would be a big deal. 49ers, Richard Sherman, calf injury. That's really about it. I'm not really concerned about anybody else besides that.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, thank you so much for taking the time with us, Doctor. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the podcast and share such insight. And of course, he knows exactly what he's talking about, as he said. So looking at it from a professional standpoint with these injuries, you're able to really tell how fast you can recover from these. But like we were talking about earlier with these athletes that are just freaks and have these recovery times, you never know with these guys, and it's really hard to tell until later on in the week when things develop a little bit more. But for now, Dr. Jesse Morris, you got his opinion on every single player that you might have on your fantasy team or playing them coming forward in upcoming weeks, defensive players even, so that you know what defenses to stay away from. Just the Bible right now if you are looking at injuries for fantasy football. Dr. Jesse Morris, thank you so much for joining us from the Fantasy Doctors. We're going to let you get back to your busy day.
Thank you very much for having me. Take care, guys. Good luck.
Awesome. We'll talk to you in the future. Thank you so much, Doctor.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Perfect. Adam, we're going to keep rolling through this now and move on to our next segment here in the podcast. the Fire waiver wire. And let's talk Baker Mayfield and what you think about him. Are you spending your fab on Baker Mayfield? Is this a guy that you want to wait a week or two for to see what he's got going on? Are you all in? What's going on with you?
Yeah, I definitely am going to wait and see, just because he's a rookie. He's only played one game, and you know, rookies can get picked on and just obliterated. But he did show he has potential. He has some weapons around him with Njoku, Landry, of course. So I definitely think he will have more impact on Jarvis Landry, Carlos Hyde, and Njoku, rather than having himself play a lot better. He'll help other players play better.
Let's talk about this really quick. You just brought up Carlos Hyde. The Browns won a game, as I'm going to bring up for the 10th time on this podcast. And Carlos Hyde, what a day it was for him. The Browns win. It was his birthday. His wife was in labor giving birth to a child of theirs. And he scored 2 touchdowns, and they won that game. He went straight to the hospital right after that, and his baby is named Carlos Jr. That is the best day that you can have as a man. Can you come up with something better than that, Adam? Because to me, when I heard that, I said, that is literally the stars aligning. Like, you couldn't be happier.
Yeah. He turned 28, too, and that's his football number, which is even more ironic.
Just keep piling it on, because I'm freaking out here. When I was reading this stuff, I was saying, wow, like, that's amazing. I can only imagine having half a good a day as Carlos had on that game. So, if you're a Carlos Hyde owner like myself, you're a happy man, and his volume is 100% there. He's looking very, very good in this offense, and he's showing it with his he's second in the league in carries, and he has at least 1 touchdown in every single game so far, with, of course, the multi-touchdown games too. Let's talk really quick the Buccaneers and Ryan Fitzpatrick, someone that, of course, should already have been picked up off the Fire waiver wire, but they're first in overall offense and passing yards with 400 passing yards a game. He's averaging, Ryan Fitzpatrick, 400 passing yards a game, Fitzmagic. If that's a waiver wire pickup for the, you know, for the century, so be it. I mean, he did throw some interceptions last game, yes. But when you're looking from a fantasy standpoint, you add those garbage time points to have him coming back. I had, personally, yesterday, why I'm stopping and bringing this up is because I squeaked out my fantasy in my friend league, the one that is probably my highest pot for money, the one I care about the most, and I was down by 0.1. I'm going to repeat, 0.1 with 5 minutes to go in the game last night, and I had Ben Roethlisberger still active on my team playing, and the other team had Fitzmagic and DeSean Jackson, who didn't, of course, do anything towards the end of the game, or really the whole game together as a whole. So it's 0.1 I'm losing by, and of course, Roethlisberger gets the ball back, does enough on that second-to-last drive to put me up by 0.2, and then they get the ball back, the Buccaneers. Fitzpatrick does absolutely nothing, incomplete, 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 and the Steelers get the ball back. Big Ben runs the clock out and seals me that victory. I was sweating through my t-shirt throughout this game. Fitzmagic is a real thing. I know that he didn't have the same game as you would hope for, but he put up another 400-yard game. He had 3 touchdowns. It's insane to see what he's doing, and I wanted to just rub that into, hopefully, Waleed, if you're listening, and to just suck on this, because I'm relishing in this victory, and I'm 3-0. I'm on the top of the leaderboard here, guys, top of the standings. I'm high-fiving Adam through the phone right now because I'm in Los Angeles and he's in Detroit, but I am excited. I'm hyped. That's why I'm so pumped today on this podcast. I'm feeling good. That's all that matters. I'm feeling good.
I love the energy, man. It's great. I mean, I'm feeling great, too. I squeaked out a late-night win with James Conner, winning a daily fantasy draft. So that was a nice $70 in the pocket.
There we go.
I wasn't expecting to get. And Lions came out with a good-looking win.
There we go. And like we were saying, the Lions are a mess to predict right now, especially with that defense. What we've been saying week in and week out is to stream running backs against that defense because they are last against the run. But against the pass, they're first in the league. It's crazy to see the disparity between their run defense and their pass defense. But if a running back is playing that Lions D, you should go out and stream them for that week. It's a matchup that's, I don't see improving throughout the year, but at least they aren't a complete mess on the defensive side of the ball. They can shut down the pass. They did a very good job handling Brady last week, which is not an easy thing to do. They rattled him. I'm a fan of that pass defense, and I'm a fan of Stafford, of course. I've got Roethlisberger and Stafford on one of my leagues because someone was stupid enough to drop Big Ben after a week one freakout, and I went and swooped, went and grabbed that, and I'm just playing the matchups now with the two of them. I'm not a big fan of having, you know, two quarterbacks on your squad, but that's mainly if you invested a lot of draft capital to get that first quarterback, just like an Aaron Rodgers or possibly somebody else like Tom Brady. But if you chilled and got Stafford or Big Ben in the 8th, 9th, 10th round and you're able to grab another one from the waiver wire, you know, you're chilling on cloud nine. So past Baker Mayfield, let's talk the fire waiver wire. Baker Mayfield, of course, we said he's going to be a big one. Josh Rosen as well. The Cardinals made the switch to him, so he's going to be a big name to watch out for. Ryan Tannehill, Miami, he just doesn't lose. I believe he's 10-1 in his last 11 games. They're 3-0 undefeated this year, and he's making his receivers look like all-stars. I don't get it, but Ryan Tannehill is doing great, and he's starting to prove a lot of his critics wrong. Andy Dalton, a guy we've been saying for the past few weeks you should look to stream him. He's a strong arm and he puts up good fantasy numbers. He's not elite, but he's definitely going to get the job done if you need him for a waiver stream. Even with AJ Green going out, because of the next guy on our list, Tyler Boyd, he has looked extremely good. He scored 2 touchdowns in 2 weeks now, and he is a deep threat, most definitely. Tyler Boyd's going to see a big uptick in volume with AJ Green going down with a groin injury and potentially missing this week as a whole. Albert Wilson, the receiver, one of the receivers for Miami and Tannehill, like we were just talking about, he caught a long bomb this week, and he's someone to keep an eye on that waiver wire as well. Calvin Ridley, if he's not already on a squad, you need to go pick him up ASAP. I grabbed him in my Yahoo League. I don't know how he was just sitting there. Not that he's going to be a week and, you know, start him every single week, but you need to play the matchups and keep an eye on what's going on with Julio Jones's injury as well. And with Freeman out, this is a pass-heavy offense that's going to be playing behind a lot with, of course, the defense being so banged up. So I believe Calvin Ridley is going to see production all year, so it's going to be great. Antonio Callaway on Cleveland, someone we talked about last week. If he's still out there, go grab him, especially with Baker Mayfield. We expect to see an uptick. Chris Ivory, you know, if you asked me a week ago, I would have said stay far away from any of the Buffalo Bills running backs. LeSean McCoy is still dealing with injury, and Buffalo isn't as bad as you think, at least last week. I don't know if it's a fluke, but they beat up the Vikings. It was honestly a landslide. They got the lead, and they never looked back, and I'm a big Chris Ivory fan. If you are extremely weak and you're looking for a desperate flex play, he's going to get the volume if LeSean McCoy is not there. Dallas Goedert, the tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles, tight end two, and this is crazy because this seems like a rare team, just like the Patriots back in the day, who used to do the Hernandez and Gronkowski. It's kind of what it reminds me of what they're trying to do. And they did invest a pretty heavy draft pick in him, someone that I was hoping that my team, the Cowboys, were going to go grab to be the heir to Jason Witten. But they didn't do that, and he's an Eagle. And he's a guy that you should go look for if you are dealing with tight end issues, if you're dealing with an injury right now at the tight end position, like an Evan Ingram or a Jack Doyle or anything like that. You should go look towards a Dallas Goedert or someone like a Ricky Seals-Jones on the Cardinals, who's going to do a little bit better with that quarterback change. And he's a guy with a lot of potential that I've been hearing a lot about all year. I expect to see him, you know, do a little bit better moving forward. He did score a touchdown this last week. Chris Conley, very interesting piece on Kansas City. It's mainly because Pat Mahomes is so amazing and because this offense is so good. He's going to have potential week in and week out to catch those long bomb touchdowns like he's been doing. He's absolutely killing it right now with this offense, and he's loving it. He's got 2 touchdowns on 5 catches. That's absolutely insane. Albert Wilson, another guy we brought up, he's got his 2 touchdowns on 8 catches. So these are big long bomb guys that, you know, you need to look towards. Kenny Stills, a guy who's got 3 touchdowns on 9 catches. It's crazy to see the boom or bust potential for some of these guys. But a guy like Calvin Ridley, who's got 4 touchdowns, you know, that's consistent production. Taylor Gabriel, a guy who had a pretty good week last week for the Bears. Look for him to continue to move forward in this offense. He's going to be a popular waiver wire pickup as well. Do you have any other waiver wire pickups that you wanted to add on top of the Fire waiver wire that you were doing personally, Adam, that I didn't
know? Yeah, I got a couple. So how I like to do my waiver wire picks is I will repeat names frequently just because I think I don't like to give a new list each week because then you're just kind of like giving new players each week just right. because they did. One game. So I do have some repeats in there. Like I had Tyler Lockett. He's in there again. I definitely think if he's still out there, he's a must grab while Baldwin's out. He's established himself as this wide receiver.
I think with Seattle too, it's kind of hard to predict because of how that offense is played. But Tyler Lockett looks like he's just relishing in the opportunity. And Will Disley, a guy that was on our list last week, finally got shut off. I think he's just a placeholder right now in this Seattle offense that needs a productive tight end. But I don't think Big Montana is the, you know, the best tight end there. And it showed last week when he got absolutely shut down. A tight end that I want to look towards moving forward, I know this is, we're moving past the Fire waiver wire, but a guy that's been kind of challenging for me, Zach Ertz, a guy I like a lot. He's 25th in the league in receiving yards, and he's got 21 catches, but he's got zero touchdowns right now. And with Wentz coming back from this injury and having 1 week under his belt, hopefully playing in better conditions this week, if you're a Zach Ertz fan, you need to start him. I believe he's going to score this week and have a breakout. And, you know, Eric Ebron, a guy that has two touchdowns, Will Disley, we just talked about, for the Seahawks. He has two touchdowns. Kelsey has two touchdowns. So, you know, I don't like to get into my tight end rankings later on when I get into my top 12s. So I'm kind of just getting that out of the way now, letting you guys know a few names to look out for. David Njoku, a guy who I think is going to thrive with Baker Mayfield, someone I've been high on all year. And I know that he hasn't quite broken out yet, but he's slowly getting better and better and getting more opportunity in this offense. He's got the route run, so I really believe that he's a guy to look out for as well.
I 100% agree on Njoku, especially with Baker Mayfield coming on. I think it could just be a little bit of something, a little change, you know, a little razzle-dazzle. He could turn into that big preseason tight end we thought he would be, that red zone guy.
You saw that connection with Baker. You saw that in the preseason, that touchdown connection that they made. It looked like something for the future and something that I got so excited for. And it kind of got lost a little bit with Tyrod Taylor. So now with Baker back, it's just like you said, a little razzle-dazzle. I'm excited to see that, and I think it's going to really, really help Njoku's value and Hyde and Callaway and Landry. Everyone gets a boost in volume in this Cleveland offense with Baker Mayfield.
Absolutely. Another tight end I kind of like on the waiver wire is Tyler Eifert. I'm not sure if you mentioned that.
Definitely.
Especially with A.J. Green getting banged up, you know, Joe Mixon still banged up. You're not going to rely on your RB2 to, like, make a bunch of plays. So, therefore, maybe Tyler Eifert comes back into his security blanket, kind of like check down, you know, even red zone type guy. He posted 74 receiving yards and kind of looks like he might have had his talent back that he once had.
I actually had some notes on Tyler Eifert here that week three he had a season high in snap percentage with 71%, targets with 8, and routes ran with 31. And his schedule sets up very nicely moving forward with the depleted Falcons, Miami, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Tampa Bay. It's pretty good matchups that aren't very good against the tight end. Yeah, it's a tough position to find a lot of value in past, just like I say, the top three or four names like Kelsey, Gronkowski, Ertz. Past that, you're kind of taking flyers in a tight end wasteland. But Tyler Eifert's a pleasant name to that hasn't been really looked at too much this year. So if he's on your waiver wire, that's a good one to pick up. I was going to talk about him in a little bit as well. I'm glad you brought him up. So 31 routes, that's a guy that's going to benefit, especially like you said, if A.J. Green goes down this week. He's definitely a guy that you need to start if he's on your team or stream if he is available in your league. Is there anyone that you're selling right now? Is there anyone that you're looking to just get rid of, working off maybe a strong week or vice versa right now, you're trying to buy high on?
No one that I could think of off the top of my head. The person who I actually kind of, he's not producing real well right now, but I did sell him high after week one, was Gronk. And nice. I mainly sold him because I'm kind of predicting he's going to get injured or something will happen along the lines where he'll miss a couple games. And then it turns out they bring in Josh Gordon, which I think will, for the time being, hurt Gronk until Josh Gordon kind of establishes himself and they get a system down of who runs what route, you right. know?
No, exactly. And that's, of course, tough to predict with fantasy moving forward, too. But let's move into our top 12 quarterback, running back, receiver rankings. And I know that you like to do more of a stardom sit-em. Do you want to do a stardom sit-em this week, or would you rather kind of just kind of take my top 12 rankings and react off them? It's totally up to you.
Yeah, I'm actually, I haven't posted or really looked into my stardom sit-ems too much, so I'm going to have that up later today. So by the time people are hearing this, my stardom sit-ems should be up. But I'll comment on your top 12s and just shoot me what you got, man.
No problem. Just someone that, of course, starting with quarterback, I want to bring up Pat Mahomes and him, his value all year. Is this a guy that week in and week out, no matter the matchup, is this a guy that you want to play week in and week out? Because he could be that auto lock of the year.
I think so. He's looked so good, and just I think the big tests are coming up. He plays the Denver, who's always been kind of known for their defense the last few years, and then right after that he plays Jacksonville. So if he can beat the test of Jacksonville, I will be all in on this guy for the rest of the year. He will be a guy who I won't be trading and who I will be trying to trade for.
Oh, most definitely. And that's another guy too. And someone I want to bring up is Big Ben Roethlisberger. Is his road woes over? Because I know this is something that people just stay far away from for him because of how bad he is on the road. But it looked like he did a little bit better, and it looks like this past week one, he's moving forward looking a lot better than he did in the past on the road. Is this something that you can shake now and something you can be confident in starting Big Ben, or do you stick with the trend and kind of stay away from him and stream somebody else against on the road?
I definitely think he's kind of turned the page maybe a little bit, or just done better on the road. I think it'll be more matchup dependent if he's playing an easy team like the Bucks, who have a weak kind of pass defense right. on the road, then obviously start him. But if he's playing a team, the Vikings, or even kind of like the Redskins, who's someone who has kind of like a lockdown corner, or at least some good defensive backs. But if he's definitely playing a weak defense on the road, and if the weather is good, I would give him the start, unless you have another better option on your bench.
Cool. Just a couple things I wanted to bring up before I dive into my rankings. Just a couple quarterback talk. Let's start with number one, Pat Mahomes against this Denver defense. I really like Pat Mahomes here. He's my number one. We got Drew Brees against the Giants. He's going to kill it. He's got two rushing touchdowns this year. Did you see that spin move that he put on two different Falcons defenders? That's 45, 50-year-old dad moves that he's spinning out there. He is absolutely killing it. He's loving his life out there with this, of course, revamped offense and getting Mark Ingram coming back soon. It's going to continue to get better, better, and better. He connected with Cameron Meredith on a touchdown, someone that you said to look out for in the beginning of the year with potential upside. He had one catch, but it was a touchdown. Number three, we got Phillip Rivers against the 49ers. I'm a big fan of this matchup, especially with Richard Sherman going down on top of already depleted secondary. Phillip Rivers, my number three this week. Aaron Rodgers against Buffalo. Yeah, Buffalo is actually not bad on defense, but it's mainly their rush defense that they're very good with. They do have an upcoming rising star on that defense with Tre'Davion White. He is just such a star, and he's going to be up there with the Jalen Ramsey's and the Casey Haywards very, very soon. He shut down Diggs last week and is a big reason why Thielen was able to really break out having that number two corner on him against the Bills. But we're moving back to quarterback rankings. Aaron Rodgers is my number four. Number five, Tom Brady versus Miami. I think he's going to tear up this defense. Six, I have Matt Ryan versus Cincinnati. Seven, I have Ben Roethlisberger versus Baltimore. Yes, I know Baltimore, the defense is strong, but with a little bit of being banged up back there too, I do like Ben Roethlisberger. Then I have Deshaun Watson against Indianapolis. The Colts, I'm not a big fan of. Matt Stafford versus Dallas. They're very good against the run. And the secondary is not quite as good, but I think Matt Stafford's going to put up a good fantasy week. Kirk Cousins, a guy who's playing the Rams, someone we usually would say stay far away from. But because of the injuries, right now we're saying you might want to take a chance on Kirk Cousins because of how thin the secondary is, I would say, for the Rams. And my number 12, I would say, would be Russell Wilson versus the Cardinals, a team that stinks. And even though the Seahawks aren't very good and the offense isn't very good, it's Russell Wilson. He's going to find a way to produce. To my running back rankings here, we got number one, Kamara at the New York Giants. Think it's a great matchup. Ezekiel Elliott, number two at the Lions. He's going to tear up this defense. Like we said, stream running backs, but I do PPR ranking, so Kamara is going to continue to ball up. He is, I believe, ninth in receiving yards in the entire league, and this is a running back here, so he is a guy that you're going to want to start as your RB1 and the star of your team week in and week out. Kamara is crazy good, even with Ingram coming back soon. Number three, Todd Gurley versus Minnesota. Four, Melvin Gordon at San Francisco. Five, Saquon Barkley at New Orleans. Six, Kareem Hunt at Denver. Jordan Howard is seven against Tampa Bay. Eight, James Conner versus Baltimore. Nine, David Johnson versus Seattle. 10, Tevin Coleman. 11, Bernard Gio. 12, Carlos Hyde. And the only reason why Carlos Hyde isn't a little bit higher this week is because I really do like Tevin Coleman and Bernard's matchups, and they're only going to be relevant for another week or two, in my opinion. Carlos Hyde's going to continue to be consistent, but he is an RB, top-end RB2 with low-end RB1 potential. Carlos Hyde is just finding a way to really, really put a big mark on this fantasy this year. And with Baker Mayfield, like we said, he's going to definitely get an uptick in production. We have Michael Thomas as my number one receiver. He's a guy that has out-caught, out-received, and outscored the Buffalo Bills receiving corps as a whole. He is an absolute monster, and he's definitely top three receivers in the league. Antonio Brown at number two. We have him playing Baltimore this week. Like I said, slightly depleted, but doesn't matter. Antonio Brown is going to tear them up. Odell Beckham Jr. for my number three. He hasn't scored yet this year. I believe he's going to this week. Look for a guy who's going to break out. Hopkins against Indianapolis. Five, Julio Jones for Cincinnati. I think he's going to score this week as well, a guy who hasn't scored yet this year. Tyreek Hill at six, playing Denver. Seven, Keenan Allen playing the 49ers. Eight, Juju Smith-Schuster playing Baltimore. He's my number eight this week because he's one of two receivers to have at least 100 receiving yards in all three games so far. Yeah, he's a receiver two on that team, but he is a very good fantasy receiver regardless because Big Ben loves to throw the ball. We have Adams coming in next against Buffalo this week. Mike Evans coming in against the Bears. And we have Adam Thielen coming in against the Rams, and T.Y. Hilton coming in against the Texans. So that is my rankings for this week. Top 12 for quarterback, running back, and wide receiver. I don't usually do the tight end rankings, like I said, because we kind of give you a stardom sit-em and people that are trending well, trending not well for tight ends. So we let you guys know that's what we did before the rankings. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. Really, really had a great time with Dr. Jesse Morse, who was able to give us a professional standpoint for all of the fantasy football injuries. Amazing to have him on. I know he had to go run and go tend to some patients. Very busy man, but thank you so much for taking the time with us. Go check him out on the Fantasy Doctors and his YouTube page, Dr. Jesse Morse on Twitter. You can go follow me on Twitter at Perry Aston. You can follow Adam on Twitter at EverydayFFB. And of course, our Twitter page at FFB Unwrapped. And you can go listen to us on podcast.com or on the Apple Podcast app. If you're on there, go leave us a rating and review. That's much appreciated. Awesome. Thank you guys so much, and we'll catch you guys next week.